First of all, I'm blessed to be able to work with Marv. I was a fan of him and anybody, you know, that loves basketball, you know, I'm sure, you know his voice. And so I want to be really good at this job. I love being around basketball. I love talking about the game. And I respect teachers. You know, I was lucky enough to work with Dick Stockton, who taught me so much. You know, Kevin Harlan and other guys, and then to be able to work with Marv, one, when I got the opportunity, it was great. He's helped me on my pacing. He's helped me slow down. I've never seen anyone research like him. I mean, he's a constant researcher. He's reading the paper 5 seconds before the game starts, and it's just his 10th paper of the day. And he's a kind man, and so it's really been fun working with him.
Welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media. I'm your host, Richard Deitch. My producer is Alan Kim. And this week, our guest is the TNT analyst, Chris Webber, who will be one of the analysts on the Western Conference Finals with Marv Albert and Reggie Miller. Craig Sager and David Aldridge are the reporters for that. That starts Monday, May 18th. We're taping this on the Friday before. So you may be listening to this, and that series will be underway. And Chris Webber will be part of that. Looking forward to talking to Chris. I've written this before. He has really improved since he first joined Turner. He's also one of those guys who can work in both the studio and remotely on a game. That's a real skill. And I think he's when he's in the studio, he can be funny. You know, he plays well off Barkley and Kenny Smith. And then when he's at the game, he's very, very good with Marv Albert and Kevin Harlan. And has become far more vocal when he believes something, especially like a call. You know, if he thinks the refs have screwed up, he'll say it. And I've really grown to like his commentary a lot. You know, he's somebody that, you know, I sort of first became aware of like five years ago, whenever he sort of first started with Turner. And I wasn't sure which way he would go, but that's a guy who's gotten a lot better as a broadcaster. And the only way generally to do that is through preparation and work and being with good producers and good partners. So good on Chris Webber. He's become a real pro at that. I'm looking forward to speaking to him. And, you know, we'll go a little beyond broadcasting, talk about the Warriors Thunder. And Alan Kim's going to have some questions for Chris, too, about what was like to play basketball as a young dude in Detroit and Chris's all-Detroit team. Detroit has an incredible legacy of great players, you know, Derek Coleman, George Gervin, Chris Webber, Jalen Rose, et cetera. So that should be fun. My thanks to my previous guest before Chris Webber, Sean McDonough, the new voice of ESPN's Monday Night Football. That was an excellent conversation. Please check that out. The previous podcast, Adnan Burke, Jessica Mendoza, Louis Riddick, Chris Hine of the Chicago Tribune. The numbers have been great. I can't thank you guys enough. We went over 1 million not too long ago in terms of downloads, and that's pretty cool. Pretty cool for me. I never in 1 million years would have thought that many people would have listened to this, but I appreciate it. All right, Chris Webber is, I don't even know where he is, Alan. He's somewhere in this country. All right, and as promised, we bring in Chris Webber, the Turner Sports NBA broadcaster. You hear him a lot now on games, but as I've written many times too, really enjoyed his work in the studio. He's one of the rare talents in NBA broadcasting circles that easily can float between remotes and the studio. And we're happy to have him on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for the kind words, man. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You got it. All right, Chris, before we get into anything with the Thunder and the Warriors, I want to ask you about covering today's players or announcing today's players, given the fact that you were in the league for a long time and that you obviously are a known entity to a lot of young guys, and probably a lot of young guys wanted to emulate you heading into the league. So first off, how forthcoming do you find today's players with you?
I think I find the players really forthcoming. A lot of them I've played with. Each year, of course, that number dwindles and dwindles, but a lot of them I've played with, and some I've gotten to get to know, and, we know that we can't BS each other. I just think that it comes from a place that they know that I respect them and I respect how hard it is. I don't have a Jones to make anybody look bad or to make myself look good by saying, you know, oh, he doesn't do it, you know, really in my head arguing that I did it a certain way. And when I played, I used to feel that about certain players that, you know, commentated, they just wanted to be negative, that type of thing. So I just found out when you're sincere, man, hopefully you get sincerity back. And if you don't, you just keep it moving. So I found guys to be pretty forthcoming. And I've also, you know, found them to look at me when they can't be forthcoming and kind of say, you know what this is. And I kind of respect that as well. So I think it goes both ways.
Chris, when it comes to talking to players, how much are you doing at the arena, whether it's before games in any kind of production-like setting versus just reaching out to them on your own?
I don't really try to reach out to players during the season unless, you know, something personal happens in their life in which they need encouragement. So I let guys do their thing, whether they're having a great season or a bad season. If I see guys and it's before a game and I want to know information or something like that, I definitely will talk to them and, you know, try to get a feel for what's going on. But for the most part, you know, when I was a player, I didn't like to do interviews before the game. I was focused, you know, had nothing against the media or had nothing against a certain person. And so I just kind of respect everybody being different. And, you know, like I said, you know, if I want to get a guy while he's shooting on the court and ask him a question or something, I'll do that. But for the most part, I really try not to bother guys during the season. We got a little bit of a summertime. During the season, they're concentrated, focused, and I don't want to be a distraction if I'm truly friends with them. And if not, then I really don't need to be calling them anyway.
Chris, who have you found in the league right now who's actively playing that you would particularly say is very honest and forthright when it comes to talking to you and talking to your Turner broadcast?
You know, I don't really know if anybody comes to mind because I don't know if I've had to really ask anybody anything during a scandal or anything like that. So as far as that, I really haven't, you know, interviewed. I think Damian Lillard, from having been around him, knowing him a little bit off the court, but having interviewed him during games and other things, I think his honesty is refreshing. I think that, I really can't think of a player that I could say, wow, they're so honest and forthcoming, because it's like nothing really was shocking that's been revealed or anything like that. It's pretty much just been basketball related. So I really can't answer that one.
Chris, I want to ask you about, before we get into Thunder Warriors, about your relationship with the press when you played versus how you perceive NBA players' relationship with the press today. I guess I'll start off with, when you played, and you played for a number of different cities, did you view the press as a friend, as foe, as just a necessity that you had to do? How did you approach the media when you were a player?
Well, I remember a few years, maybe two or three years, I won some award from the media for being honest or giving my opinion or being a good interview, whatever it was. I don't know how official it is, but I know that members of the media used to say that to me. I look at the media as one full company in which, you know, it was a necessary evil and part of the business of basketball. You know, it's the first reality show. It's easy to ask somebody a tough question. It's tougher to answer it after a loss or after a big moment in your life. And so I think people are people. I think that there's some people that's going to try to bully you and they feel good because you don't have success because their life is in shambles. I think there are others that are going to try to make you look good no matter what because of a certain reason. I think that, you know, it's just, you have to just find out who those people are and treat them as such, because I think that sometimes it's unfair. Sometimes people have a story already written, and the way they come to you with the question is not even sincere. They're asking about something but want to relate it to something else. I've seen that. And I've also seen reporters do a great job and make guys say, wow, I didn't even look at my situation like that. You know, I'm more appreciative that this certain journalist, writer, beat writer, whoever, pointed these issues out. And I've seen kind of the way the media looks at a guy kind of makes him embrace himself and changes that much more. So I've seen the positive and the negative. I've seen the setup and the encouragement. I've seen the truth And I've seen, you know, people put out, you know, people use catchphrases, words, and dog whistles to kind of predict or to kind of just softly put words out there. So I've just kind of seen it both ways. And so me, I've just tried to keep it like I do life, treat people as I've been treated, be honest and keep it moving. And so I kind of looked at it in all those different ways.
Chris, you played for Golden State, Sacramento, Philly, Washington, and Detroit. Did you find, you know, the obvious like thought might be that cities like Philly and Detroit, in Washington maybe could be tougher media markets than Golden State and Sacramento because they're busier, maybe because they're more intense. As a player, did you find that depending on where you played, that the press corps was different?
No, I think every place is inherently different. I think some places are more basketball towns than others. I think that some places have more of a shock value. The sky is falling than others, you know, whether it's New York or maybe even a small city like a Sacramento. So I think the environments really matter. I think location matters to that. The culture there matters to that. So, yeah, it is a difference. Some cities may be tougher or not, but for the most part, it's really the same. For the most part, it's really the same. I think when you're in a smaller city like Sacramento or OKT, when you put Mr. Unreliable or something like that, it's like, how dare you?
Right, right.
You have nothing but Kevin Durant there. You know, when did you want to become the New York Post? and, you know, that kind of takes away from the player that wanted to be in a small and beautiful place, you know, those type of things. So I think the media, you know, each place is different or what we expect, you know, with that story, because they could put the same thing as a New York Post camp, which says they can't, you know, they're a publication just like them. But I think it's the way that we look at them and our expectations as well. But every place is different. And for the most part, you know, it's been cool everywhere. You just have to watch out for those that just, you know, I think those that like reporting the same story, those that want to jump on the soapbox before the story or before the fire's put out. Those are the ones that, you know, usually you have to watch out for because they'll do anything to stay relevant.
One more question just on your own career. Given that you had a lot of attention on you when you were young, getting to the Final Four with the Fab Five. So you were used to reporters, national reporters, at a very young age. Do you think you could have thrived, at least in terms of dealing with the press in a big media market like New York or Los Angeles?
Do I think I could have what?
Do you think you could have thrived? Like, would that have been a good market for you in terms of dealing with the press, as opposed to, let's say, a market like Sacramento or Golden State, which just is inevitably is smaller and has less media people?
Yeah, I think that, of course, there's advantages the larger the media market. But I also think that was the time that I played in, like I was in that transition. You know, you had Karl Malone and those guys were Stockton in Utah, but really the place you wanted to be, you know, Shaq, you know, left Orlando around that time. You wanted big markets. But I think what's changed today and what's great about basketball, but I'm glad that I wasn't around for, and that's the internet and social media. So now I think even though it does, you know, even though it may be different in the Sacramento and a Golden State, it still doesn't matter because on my Twitter feed, I get all the Curry updates. I get his dribbling drills before every game. I can watch the game now on the subway. I can watch the game in the airport. So I really don't think it matters anymore, the size of the market, especially because guys, you know, really don't care about, you know, living in a certain city. They can travel to that city, you know, in the summer. I think it really, and I think, yeah, I could have thrived in any of those cities if I would have won. I think it's easier to thrive if you win or if you're close to winning. And so I think that's first and foremost. If you win, it'll be a little bit easier. But, you know, I do think it is a secret, or I'm sorry, I do think there is a certain way you have to deal with the media in New York in order to be respected like a Derek Jeter, even though winning did help a lot with that.
Right. It's interesting. I don't even want to fathom you at Michigan in the era of Twitter and Facebook. I mean, you, You'd probably have to turn your feeds off. It would have been too insane if that team played in 2016.
But also, you know, just the closeness that you get. Like, as a fan, I would have loved to have it with the Bad Boys and see them come out before the locker room and be able to tweet
right.
my favorite player. But at the same time, a lot of negativity, I'm sure, comes out with the players today after winning a game, losing a game, and just, you know, I just wouldn't want to be a part of a generation that, you know, is what I'm hearing, dependent on, you know, that while that's going on. I just think that's, you know, a lot of extra pressure for those guys if, in fact, they do really read all those things. So I just couldn't imagine what that'd be like, especially for high schoolers, guys in college. It just seems like it's a lot.
Yeah, no, I hear you. That would be pretty cool, though, you man. Get, like, Vinnie Johnson, Isaiah, Sally, Mahorn before the like the Eastern Conference Championship or something like that. That would be awesome if social media provided that. I give you that.
It would have been crazy, but they would have had to block me because I'd have been the crazy fan, like tweeting them 100 times. That's what I'm saying. It would not have been good for me. They would have hated me. I would have been on the watch list because I'm like stalking them. So some people like myself is glad it wasn't out there.
That's funny. All right, Chris, you have the Thunder and the Warriors in a couple days from when we taped this. This is a media podcast, and a lot of the broadcasters we've had on, they talk about sort of how they prepare for their job. Because one, I think it's interesting, and two, for a lot of young people who listen to this podcast, I think it gives them some ideas as they head into the field. So, in as much detail as you want to give, how do you start to prepare for this series? I know you've seen these two teams; you've probably broadcast them a couple of times, but you know, there are things you're obviously going to do to prepare for this upcoming series. So what do you do as a broadcaster, let's even say starting today?
Well, very honest, and for these kids out there, hopefully they'll understand that the longer they live, the more experience they'll get in a certain area. So the number one thing I've bring to the table is I've been around the NBA almost 25 years. And so every day of my life, when I played and when I scouted and when I had to prepare for games, that taught me what to do right now, and it gave me that. So I didn't have to have this big learning curve because it was already in the wheelhouse of preparation. So Turner gives us a great staff that all week we talk to and we work with as far as statistics. My director and our producers are always talking back and forth about ideas. And we love sports so much. It is work and it is a job, but it's all we're talking about anyway. So, you know, I may have a conversation with other basketball players that I play with just to get a feel. I know that we all have different opinions. I don't mind bringing a different opinion to the table, and I don't mind understanding someone else's opinion. And so a lot of times I'll call a Hall of Famer that's been in a certain position, or if there's something, a thing that's going around and everybody's on one side, I'll ask questions on the other side from people that have played or from executives. So I always try to do separate research as far as what the hot stories or the hot topics or who we're bashing, those type of things to figure out. Secondly, the staff at Turner, from our directors and producers, they give us the statistics. Of course, I have to make sure that I understand that, but my experience allows me to put it into context. So I know a lot of people read the stat sheet, but to really put it into context without saying this guy has 16 assists and 7 turnovers without realizing when he had them, what quarter, how he had them, was it bad passes, should he have shot the ball anyway, what was the pace of the game, what was the time, all those things you have to understand. And so the context is really next, putting it in there. Third is the history of each team, you know, and their coaches and the style of play and how you know they're going to match up. And so it's going to be very interesting in this next series, having watched and done some really good Golden State games, whether it was the game I think they blew out Cleveland by 30, or whether it was other games I've done with them this year or last year, watching their run in the championship, or whether it's OKC and watching their will and how they came back from a 30-point loss, and just watching the maturation of Westbrook and Durant. And it wasn't just in their scoring and points, but in their efficiency, how they handle it in a tough mind state. And so definitely getting a feel for the game, going out before the game, watching guys warm up, see who's shooting well, talking to guys with Tim. I understood that maybe sooner than a lot of others that, you know, his body wasn't holding up and those type of things. So, you know, it really comes down to a team effort and experience and just trying to learn as much as possible. I will watch the last two games of each team. I won't go back and watch the season because I understand from the season and playing them that those games really don't matter. And I'll talk to coaches and friends alike and just try to do as much as I can. It's not a certain remedy or the same way or a template every time, but it's trying to just be as prepared and as much information. And I really learned how to do that, you know, from one, my mother, who was a teacher and used to erase all my papers and make me write things over and make me study. But I really have to give, you know, Reggie and Kevin Harlan and Marv and other guys that when I first came into the game, I would have my notes, but I think that in watching them, I became more efficient in taking notes. And I also had more confidence in myself from the discussions that we had and seeing that we were on the same page. So, you know, really thank everybody there for really just helping me take a little bit from everybody and now coming up with my own style.
Chris, one of the things that I found really interesting was for game two of the Spurs Thunder, and you've talked about this now a couple of times, you were very animated about what you perceived, and correctly, by the way, to be miscalls by officials. It's often rare that you see an analyst that forthright, you know, given, listen, you know this, the league is watching, TNT is a rights holder with the NBA, but I respected the fact that you saw something and you wanted to let the viewers know what you saw. Has that part for you been a maturation process? Like, could you have done that 3 or 4 years ago? Or is this something that you have to be in the business for a little bit? You got to feel confident in yourself. You saw what you saw and, you know, you're telling the viewers no matter what the fallout is.
Well, the good thing about Turner is that from day one, they've encouraged me more than anything to be myself and to say what's on my mind, whether it's in the studio or out of the studio. I mean, literally, that's number one thing that they preach. I don't want to be a distraction to the NBA, and I definitely don't want to cause harm to it. But I think that honesty is the best way, and I'm a fan first. So the good thing is I'm not part of I'm not part of the old NBA where I have a million allies and, you know, I'm not part of any of these groups, you know, not that they're groups or anything's bad about that, but I'm not, if there are, I'm not part of any of them. And so the fact that the fact that I could be myself and the fact that I could be honest and it's just good. It's a blessing for me to still be close to basketball. I honor this position. And I just feel that, you know, I've been on good teams in Sacramento where if, you know, we're playing a terrible team, that terrible team deserves the benefit of the doubt because we're in the NBA and we're equal. And when we played the Bulls, who have won 72 games at the Bullets, we deserve the same respect as Jordan and those guys, though it may sound funny.
Right.
And I've just been in those positions and it was an obvious offensive foul to me. It was a play that I had never seen before. And I'd seen the stepping on the line and that not being called and other things. And so I just know how sensitive fans can be. I was a sensitive Pistons fans and I don't want to ever seem as if cheering for one or the other, but you know, we always talk about players and the narrative is so different. We can say, oh my God, with the player from Toronto's players, they're playing Lowry. He's playing terrible. He's horrible. But I can't say the refs missed the call. I didn't even say a referee's name because I know how tough, how hard the job is. And, you know, but I also know my intentions in my heart. And I think that the referees did as well because I flew back with a couple of them on the flight and we laughed about it. And I told them I almost had a heart attack and got a text from my mom, so I don't know what's going on out there, you know, from what's being said out there, and we laughed about it. But I just want to be honest. I didn't think it was on purpose or malicious or anything, but it was just an exciting game. That was the playoffs, and I just had to be myself, and that's something that I have no problem with. I just want to make sure that I still respect the game and present it in a way and which is respectable and fair to everyone. And I don't feel bad about that game at all.
Yeah, I like the fact that, at least if nothing else, you gave a heads up on the flight back with the refs. That's good. Now you're back in good with them, if nothing else.
Well, not even that. I mean, I really don't care to be in good with the refs. I'm not calling any games for me. So, you know, it's just I respect that position. And so that's all. Just it wasn't personal. If I can talk about players, if I've been in positions where I've had to man up for mistakes, what's the big problem? What's the big, well, people don't even remember what refs did the game.
Right, right.
Or they didn't say their name on purpose. And so it wasn't personal. And I don't think it, well, to some it may have come out personal, but that wasn't the intent. And just hopefully we just keep, continue to have some great games.
You, you know, if you talk to enough broadcasters, you learn that the way you develop chemistry with your partner is often off the air and not on the air. You develop the chemistry by going out for dinner and hanging out in production meetings beforehand, maybe flying or driving together. I find that you and Marv have gotten to have a really nice chemistry, which is interesting because, you know, you're distinctly different ages, obviously. You're from different eras. He's white. You're black. Totally different guys, but yet the chemistry seems to work. Why does it work? And how did you, how were you guys able to forge that partnership?
Well, first of all, I'm blessed to be able to work with Marv. I was a fan of him, and anybody, you know, that loves basketball, you know, I'm sure, you know his voice. And so, I want to be really good at this job. I love being around basketball. I love talking about the game, and I respect teachers. You know, I was lucky enough to work with Dick Stockton, who taught me so much, and, you know, Kevin Harlan and other guys. And then to be able to work with Marv, one, when I got the opportunity, it was great. He's helped me on my pacing. He's helped me slow down. Right now we have a joke, and I shouldn't even say it because I know some smart guy is going to make sure he makes me remember this, but I say exactly right every single time. So Marv would say, "Chris, that was a wonderful play." I say, "You're exactly right, Marv." He writes it down on the paper and we'll just laugh about it. He's like, "Come on," you know? And so he's just been so great, man, for my confidence. He's been great just sitting in the locker room, and I can ask him about commentators, you know, before him, baseball players, basketball, football players, stories, context. I've never seen anyone research like him. I mean, he's a constant researcher. He's reading the paper 5 seconds before the game starts, and it's just this 10th paper of the day. And he's a kind man, and so it's really been fun working with him. I think I don't know if necessarily we have a lot in common besides movies, and besides he has some funny jokes. He's Marv is very funny, but I just thank him for sharing his knowledge with me of the game. I mean, he doesn't have to do that. You know, he could be a jerk and be one that says, you know, "I want to look good. It's not about a team. You know, it's about me. Why would I let you shine?" Those type of things. And so besides the opportunity that Turner's given me to be able to work with great commentators, and they didn't have to do it, I have to give a lot of that to Marv because it's the platform. And, you know, he allows me to say what I want. We keep it moving and we have fun. And so, besides trying to get him to listen to some Big or Pac before each game to get him pumped up, we really have, you know, he won't do that. Besides that, we really have no issues.
Nice. It's nice words from Marv there from Chris, who will do the Western Conference Finals with Reggie Miller and Marv Albert as the main team. All right, a couple more for you, Chris. Was a couple days ago, prior to us taping this podcast, Tracy McGrady has gotten a lot of attention saying that the NBA is now a watered-down league from the era that he played. That's also the era that you played. What are your thoughts on the NBA game today versus even your era? Do you find it to be a watered-down league, as McGrady said, or do you think maybe that's a bit of an overstatement?
Yeah, I don't think, first, I don't think you can compare any type of eras. And I don't think you compare errors, especially when the play was different. And so the older I'm getting, I do think that every generation feels that, you know, that they're the last link to the great links. And so, I mean, I think Tracy has a point and I think he's wrong. So, you know, I think it's, 50% both ways. I can see how you say the league's watered down if you go on the fact of the way it's played, meaning centers, and the way that, he played with Yao Ming and people giving bowls, and it was different, and technical fouls were different. It was a different day. And so if you're using it back then, like if you say football is watered down, even though we have more passing yards and things like that than it was when Terry Bradshaw threw, or when just a few years ago they changed the rules on the DBs. If you want to say it's changed, then I guess so. But that's the game is watered down. That doesn't mean that players aren't as good or that players are accomplishing more because of the game, or the loss of integrity of the game, or the weight of the players in the game. So if you're just saying that the game is different, and back in the day it was a different era, like boxing is soft today because there's no more 25-round fights, then that's true. 25-round fights are much harder than 15-round fights, but the boxers are just as good and the situation is the same. So, you know, it depends on how you look at it. But, you know, I think Curry would be great in any era.
All right, let's take a break. We'll be back in a moment with Chris Weber. With the NBA playoffs in high gear, SI's Andrew Sharp and Ben Golliver are doing multiple shows a week on Open Floor, SI's NBA podcast. These guys watch unhealthy amounts of basketball and lay out all the best drama and the best storylines. That's Open Floor, SI's NBA podcast. Find it on your podcast client of choice, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, and always at SI.com/podcast. Chris, the couple times that I've talked to you over the past couple of years, one of the things that's always seemingly of interest to you and something that you'd like to do is either writing an autobiography or doing a documentary on your journey. As of today in 2016, where do you stand with those two potential projects?
My stand is at completion, and finishing and worried about, or finishing and planning the execution. Wow. So, you know, finish with both projects, and hopefully they'll be out soon. And which, you know, hopefully this upcoming basketball season, and you know, we'll see what happens.
You happy with? Are you happy with what's both on the printed page and whatever the film is going to be?
Well, if I'm not, I can only blame myself with the printed page. So I better be happy, and I'm trying to make sure we're at that point. And, you know, just love basketball, have a great family, and, you know, it's going to be fun to tell the perspective of growing up in Detroit, and God's grace and all the people that helped me reach a great platform in basketball, and those that kept their love around without basketball. So hopefully it'll be cool. Hopefully it'll be as inspiring as it was to some of those that kind of went through the ups and downs.
Mm, okay, and like as a time frame, next couple of years you're looking at.
You know what? I would love to tell you, and I promise you I'll come back on and read chapters and let you ask me any single question in the world about the book. I just don't want to lie to you and hold it. It's like I have some friends that are music artists, right? So as soon as they say their release date and it doesn't happen that way, it's I'm like boo to you, you know?
Right,
don't feel that way myself. But hopefully within the next coming months, we can come back on the show and talk about the next moves.
Excellent. All right. I appreciate that. All right. We'll finish up with a couple of questions from Twitter followers that wanted to ask you, as well as my producer, Alan Kim, big NBA fan, has a couple of quick ones too. First off, Chris, who's the hardest guy for you to guard during your career and why?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Wow. In the West Coast, it was crazy because every night, you know, I don't know how many teams in the, you could just imagine how many teams in the West, but Rasheed was in Portland, Dirk was in
Dallas,
you know, Tim Duncan was in San Antonio, and KG was in Minnesota, and that was just for that, and I'm sure I'm forgetting someone, but what comes to mind now is Vin Baker, young Vin Baker, when he was out there in Milwaukee, he had such a great post game, the ways that he moved. And I would say, of course, you have to say Dirk Nowitzki. He was definitely up there. as well. Those two are the first that come to mind, but I'm sure if I thought about it more, you know, but those, all those guys, KG, Tim, Rashid, all the power forwards at that time, to me, were just so tough to guard.
Interesting. Vin Baker would not have guessed that. How do you think your early 2000s Kings teams would have translated into the modern NBA, especially given those Kings team of yours were, they moved the ball really well, great passing team?
Yeah, we would be really good. We'd be up there, you know, because we would be right up there. I think Bibby, Jay Will, you know, Vlade's still one of the best passing big players. Pazer still has records for shooting. So I think that our skill set would have allowed for the way that they play these days, which is ball movement, shooting, fast pace. We would have been right up there.
You played with him briefly. He's been in the news a lot, obviously, with the Hall of Fame. What did you think of Allen Iverson as a teammate?
I thought Allen Iverson was a great teammate. I thought he's a better person, but he's a great teammate. I've never played with the person that played harder than him every night. Some may have played as hard, but when I think of how he plays on the court, and I know that people talk about his famous court of practice and other things like that, but I saw his body after games, how bruised he was, the pain that he took, the fierceness he played with, how he played and got through every screen, how he wanted to put that ball in the bucket. People use beast mode, and I understand that when you talk about Lynch, but that little man right there, AI, is beast mode. I'm talking about every night, he didn't care who you were, his fire. You know, he's the reason why mentality separates the greats from anyone else. You could shoot better than him. You could run faster than him. You could think you could do everything better than him, even though that's not true because physically he was gifted. But mentally, you aren't going to be stronger than him, not an opponent, not a guard. And I saw that every night.
Wow, that's high praise. All right, last one for me, and then I'll let my producer finish up, Alan Kim. Chris, if you played today in, like, the small ball stretch four system, how many threes – would you been able to make? And that seems to me, had you played in like a Warriors type of system today, I feel like that would have been perfect for you. But you tell me, maybe I'm wrong, but it seems like your game would have been made as a long stretch for a team like Golden State.
Yeah, it was a different time now. I remember in Washington, I shot, I think, 39% threes. And, you know, that wasn't the way to play. So you get back in the post. So I would have worked on it and I would have gotten better. That's one thing I do know. So I don't know what I would have shot or what would have happened, but I would have worked on it and got it better. And in Golden State, you know, Don Nelson is one of the first guys that started this small ball. Let's remember.
Right.
Part of that was with me, my rookie year when I played center and there in Golden State. So a lot of this is, you know, it's an evolution from the great coaches. Kerr has done a wonderful job. But just because he's not older than some people, he couldn't have, you know, made the offense up. So when you look back at now Don Nelson, or you look back at Coach Carrillo, the great Princeton coach, who all of the back cuts and everything else are designed on, and just go back to the game when they played Georgetown, almost won, you would see how it works against a team that is way more athletic than you. So imagine if you have the skill set and players that are unselfish to put in that system, and that's what Kerr has done there, and a wonderful job. But, yeah, I definitely think we would have been able to play in this style, and it would have been definitely a lot of fun. But hey, these guys are doing it now, and anytime you got a guy like Kevin Durant, who's 6'11", shooting deep threes, you're gonna be in trouble. So in a way, too, I'm glad that I'm not out there now, because you'd have to learn defensively how to play a whole other way, seeing a guy like that every night.
All right, let me hand the questions over for a little bit to producer Alan Kim.
Hey, Chris. So I know you grew up in Detroit and you played at St. Cecilia's gym.
Yeah.
And, you know, for listeners that are unaware, that's New York has Rucker Park and Detroit has St. Cecilia's. So do you have any favorite stories or memories from playing there?
Wow. I have so many stories from playing at St. Cecilia. I would say my favorite stories are after church. We get out of church about 1:30 and we would go to St. Cecilia and watch the games before the second service. And so in between church, I'm in my church clothes and I'm getting to watch Derek Coleman play, or Steve Smith play, or Terry Durod play, or Mark Aguirre, or Isaiah Thomas play. And so, you know, all this is for like $4, man. And you know, I'm sitting there with like a little ice cream place down the street, and you know, we get some food, and I could just sit there with my father and my brothers. It was the craziest thing. So just being able to watch, you know, watch those guys play, Doug Smith, Anderson Hunt, Paris Hickman, I'm trying to think, Matt Steger, anyone that came up those days, it was just cool watching. So I remember more the feel and more the gym. If you ever go, it's you lose weight there because it's no open windows. It's only one door. It's the perfect setting, man. It should be in a movie just for the type of place it was. And so just being there with all the people, the cars, the music outside, you know, it was just the whole vibe of it, which was wonderful about St. Cecilia.
So kind of piggybacking off of that, you know, Detroit has a rich basketball history. If you could put a team together of Detroit-only players, who would be your starting five?
Wow. That's a good one. Detroit-only players, who'd be my starting five? Okay, I have to talk this out. So Emmanuel Bibb was crazy. Deshaun Leonard, Howard Eisley, went to high school with them. Let me see. Of course, Jalen. Of course, Steve. Of course, DC, Doug Smith, Victor Alexander, Anderson Hunt, and everything. Okay, here we go. At the pool. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Also, remember, you can totally put yourself on that list, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I am. I'm on the list. Oh, don't worry about that, bro. I'm definitely on the list. Wait, you said from Michigan now?
It could be Detroit. We can do all of Michigan if you want.
Oh, from Detroit. Okay, cool. Because you say from Detroit.
Yeah, let's make it Detroit because I feel like that's a tougher list to do. That's more interesting.
Yeah, good. Right. Because I can't. Yeah, Magic. I got. Okay, cool.
Yeah, too many guys in Magic. Yeah, too many guys in Detroit.
From Detroit, I'm going to go. Okay, I'm going to go. Jalen, Steve Smith, Derek Coleman, myself. Oh, it's tough. Okay, Jalen, Steve Smith. Those two, 6'7". You got me and DC. We could play the center. So we need one real small point guard. So I'm gonna go. I say Howard Eisley because he played or Hunt. I'm gonna go Anderson Hunt.
Oof. Okay, that's a great team. Right,
that's a pretty good. A lot of size on that team, especially in the backcourt.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. No, I'm gonna go George Gervin.
Oh, yeah. So now you have George a small Gervin, forward, actually.
Yeah, there we go. Or Anderson Hunt, depending on versatility.
Well, yeah, you get a six guy off the bench. You get an Anderson. Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to preface this question by asking you first. Did you see the ESPN 30 for 30, this magic moment?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so Shaq made it pretty clear he preferred playing with...
Oh, magic moment? Oh, yeah. No. I didn't see all that. I saw some pieces. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like Shaq made it pretty clear he wanted to play with Penny over you. When you were traded to Golden State, were you somewhat relieved that you were playing Golden State instead of with Shaq in Orlando just because in terms of personnel and style, you were probably a better fit in Golden State?
No. If I would have done the Blue Chips movie, I was on some, we got to conquer the world type stuff. So I was asked to be part of the movie and I wasn't doing any movies. I wanted to get my man on the court. I was pissed off about what had happened, how college has ended. And I was determined to come into the league and do something. And so I remember when my agent asked me, and I was just like, no, what part of the game is this? We got work to do. And so now that I look back, maybe if I would have got to play there too, I would have showed Shaq, I'm going to average a triple-double throwing you these alley-oops and helping you rebound. But when I seeing Penny play back then was one of the most incredible things I had seen. I played against him at AAU, and I had never seen anybody his height with that quickness be able to dribble like that. Penny, in my mind, was one of the most exciting players I've ever seen in this game, bar none. So if I was Orlando, I would have drafted Penny, because if I have a chance to get Magic and Kareem again, I would have done that. And so I definitely understood why. I wasn't sad at all because I was going to get to play with Tim Hardaway and Chris Mullin. So I didn't care. And by the way, you're going to in the NBA, you don't you're not crying about where you're going. So yeah. I was just excited to be in the NBA, number one pick, and going to Oakland. It was it reminded me a lot of Detroit, just a lot warmer. The people there were cool, and we had a crazy loud arena. So I was just happy. I knew I was blessed to be in the NBA, coming from where I'm coming from. It was, you don't care if it's Orlando or Oakland, you just want to get to the league. So I knew I was blessed, man.
And do you think if you went to Orlando that Shaq and you would have been the best big man combo of all time?
I mean, of course, I'm going to say that, definitely. You know, you have to look at the other ones. But the thing was is that, I mean, Shaq is the most dominant player of all time. So, yeah, if I would have done my job easily, of course, it wouldn't have been that hard to me to have a triple-double playing with him, especially coming off the high-low pick-and-roll where I could go up top to him. I mean, he's going to give you six. I mean, I played with George Mirosan. George Mirosan can get you four assists a game because he could, you know, shoot the jump hook and shoot the jumper, you know, or playing with a guy like Juwan. You know, he gets you three assists a game easily. So playing with a guy like Shaq, of course, you know, I felt that, you know, that's what I felt. I felt that we were going to have a great team and I was going to, you know, do that and just throw them up to him. But just wasn't meant to be.
Okay. Another one. So are there any current players in the league that you see yourself in?
Not really, only because I try not to. So I'm sure there's some similarities with guys. There are a lot of guys that I love their game. And I think there are a lot of guys that maybe we like the same spots on the floor or could do some of the same things. But not really. I think these guys out here are in the league of their own, and this is their time.
Okay. Stepping away from basketball for this final question, I know you produced a song with Nas. What was it like working with Nas, and would you ever get back into music production?
I did two for him. His greatest hits, Surviving the Times and Blunt Ashes. And it was an honor that he would allow me to bless him with some beats. And I do make beats and been doing them for behind the scenes things that necessarily doesn't have for shows that don't have rhymes on or and then there's some other artists that'll be coming out with some songs in the future that I'm really happy about. So music has always been a passion, and it's something that thankfully you can do at all times, depending on where you are. And it's kind of easier to do now than it has been in the past. Now they need a studio and things like that. So, but you know, Nas was a dream come true. Really, after doing that, I could have just quit. So that was one of the biggest thrills in my life, being able to do those two for him.
Nice. This first podcast we've gotten both Nas and Marv Albert in the same podcast. So I'm proud of this podcast very much.
Yeah, right. That's crazy. That's probably the first time ever their names have been the same.
No doubt. All right, Chris Webber will be calling the Western Conference Finals on TNT with Marv Albert and Reggie Miller. Craig Sager and David Aldridge are the reporters on that. That series starts, we're taping this on a Friday. That series starts Monday, May 16th. Knock on wood, it's going to go hopefully pretty far. Listen, Chris, I've always, I've been enjoying your work for the last couple of years, and I really appreciate what has clearly been you taking the time and the preparation to get better as a broadcaster. I hear from a lot of people, given what I write and what I do, and people really seem to like your work. So that's on you in terms of improving and getting better. And enjoy the finals, and wish you the best of luck as you head forward with the broadcasting career. Thanks so much for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Thank you, man. And if I could be like Mean Gene Okerlund, that'd be a dream come true. Because now that I think about it, you know, with WWF, he might be the guy that I really wanted to be. No, I'm just going bullshit. Thank you very much, man. I really appreciate it.
You got
it.
Yeah, listen, Chris, you never know. WWE is always looking for good voices. Don't knock it. Don't count it out. Might happen.
I hear you. All right. I hear you. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, Chris. For the baseball fans out there, you have to check out SI's baseball podcast, The Strike Zone, with Ted Keith and Steve Canella. If you want to hear about the murderer's row of Mets pitchers, Max Scherzer striking out 20 Tigers, or the Cubs with the best record in baseball, check out The Strike Zone. It's a can't-miss podcast. You'll find The Strike Zone all summer long on iTunes, Stitcher, and now Google Play Music. The entire SI network of podcasts can be found at si.com/podcasts.
All right, back in the studio quickly with Alan Kim. Alan, dominating this podcast with multiple questions. I like it, though. That Chris obviously getting animated in a good way when talking about Nas. Clearly, the guy loves music. I think he's always, even reading profiles at SI back in the day, Chris was very big into music. He had an amazing collection of African art. Scott Price once did a profile on him, and he just he had this, like, just incredible, like, world-class collection. I probably should have asked him about it.
Is it in the SI vault somewhere?
It is in the SI vault somewhere. Okay. But the Detroit, like, what I want to sort of just quickly talk about was that Detroit team was awesome. I love that. Like, it'd be great to ask, like, athletes from certain, like, big places with, like, a lot of notable basketball players. Like, you know, what's your all-New York team? What's your all-Miami team? But that was pretty cool, actually.
Yeah. And, like, he had to really think that one through because there are so many people out there. So, yeah.
He, Mark Aguirre's a Detroit guy. I kind of feel like, shouldn't he have been on that team? Did he have Vashon on? I know it just happened like a second ago. I'm trying to remember. He had Jalen on.
Derek Coleman.
Coleman, Gervin himself. Anderson Hunt was the sixth guy. Who were we missing? Can't even remember. Yeah, that's sad.
That we just forgot.
That's sad on our part that we don't know. But it's very clear that some amazing ball going on in Detroit. And actually, if he would have extended it to Michigan, it would have been ridiculous.
That's just unfair.
Because then you get Magic and, like, you know. Steve Smith was the, the Detroit
Steve
guy.
You're right.
Steve Smith. So that's a that's an impressive team. And I like his I thought his answer about Marv was pretty cool. How and he's totally right on this sense in that if you are a famous broadcaster like Marv Albert and you want to be an asshole to your partner and basically don't allow that partner airtime, you can do it.
Yeah.
Shut him out. You never give the partner openings. Marv is great about sort of self-deprecating either for himself or mocking his partner, which allows his partner to come in. It makes for a really fun broadcast. I think Van Gundy and Jackson are very good at that, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. My thanks to Chris Webber and to Turner for making that happen today as we are on the eve of the Western Conference Finals. You want to make a prediction, Alan, for the Western Conference Finals before we get out of here? By the way, back last July, I called the Warriors Thunder as the Western Conference Finals, so I feel good about myself. I'm not sure. I think I would take the Warriors, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think I like the Warriors in six or seven.
I'm with you on Warriors six or seven. I still got to go with the Warriors, but, I mean, I'm still in shock that the Spurs lost to the Thunder.
Thunder looked excellent.
They did. No, they looked amazing.
Steve, yeah. Steven Adams and the rest of the supporting cast are playing at a high level, and obviously Westbrook and Durant.
Yeah.
That is a nasty team.
Yeah.
That said, I've seen at least two games between the Warriors and the Thunder, and I feel like the Warriors ultimately are going to win that series. I feel like they have them in the end.
It seems like they had their number, but it wouldn't shock me if the Thunder won.
Same here.
But I'm still going.
Don't you think the Thunder are going to need, like, a game from either Westbrook or Durant where they go for, like, 40 and, like, just sort of ride them home in an unexpected win? Like, something crazy is going to have to happen to win the series for them.
They're going
to
go nuts. One or both are going to have, like, 30, 40 games.
You also have to win on their court, which is hard, once.
Yeah, that's true.
But it should be a great series. And I think the Cavs roll against either the Heat or the
Cavs are going to walk right to the finals.
You do give the Raptors or the Heat a game? I think I would give them a game.
At least a game, yeah. I think they go
five or six?
To six.
Yeah. Okay, I like that. All right, and then we're going to get, you know, looks like we could be getting a replay of last year's series, which should be much better, given that everybody's healthy now.
Yeah.
Kyrie's healthy, Love's healthy, and the Cavs are playing much better.
Yeah.
All right. It's like the what's the NBA podcast that SI has?
Open Floor.
Yeah, this is like Open Floor right now. Let's bring Dollinger in and Andrew Sharp. All right. My thanks to Chris Webber. My thanks to Alan Kim, my other producer, Bette Marston, Dan Bloom of Panoply, Paul Fichtenbaum, Ryan Hunt, John Wertheim, Ben Eagle of SI. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network, the number one daily sports podcast network? Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.